Hello and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, August 12, 2020. I'm your reader, Paula Carrezzi. In today's weather in the Cedar Rapids area, we'll have sunny skies and a high of 85 degrees. Tonight will be mostly clear with a low around 62. And today's top story in the Gazette is titled Rude Awakening, written by Grace King, Trish Mahaffey, and Jeff Johnson. There is no calm after the storm, or power, or reliable internet, or much gas. But after a storm Monday that mimicked an inland hurricane with howling winds reaching 100 miles per hour walloped eastern Iowa, the sun came up Tuesday on the blessing of neighbors helping neighbors, the curse of long queues at gas stations and grocery stores, and the unenviable task of trying to empty the fridge before it's too late. Here are your stories. Mother Nature and God is testing us. Jerry Cadlich and Jane Kilgallen sat on their porch with a phone book and cell phone trying to get in touch with a tree removal service and Alliant Energy. A tree was shattered in their backyard, having smashed Kilgallen's 10-foot-tall sunflowers, now resting on their detached garage and pulling cables connected to the house. Quote, "I'm not sure who's going to clean all this. It's a whole tree. I can't move any of it," Cadlich said. After assessing the damage Monday, Kilgallen invited her neighbors over for beer, quote, "because the beer was getting warm," end quote, in exchange for their labor and chainsaws, which quickly ran out of gas. Kilgallen wished some elected officials would walk by to offer reassurance and maybe coffee. Quote, "This is going to be a double whammy for people who are unemployed because of COVID-19, Kilgallen said. "Mother Nature and God is testing us." Silver lining for handyman's business. The storm gives Javon Walton hope he will be able to continue providing for his family. Walton has been the owner of Blackstone Handy Service for 13 years, which does siding, windows, and doors. He expects Monday's storm will keep him busy for the next 2 years. Quote, "It's bad, but at the same time, it's a blessing in my book," Walton said as he picked up scrap metal with his 13-year-old son Tuesday afternoon in the Oak Hill-Jackson neighborhood. Walton's house in the northeast quadrant of Cedar Rapids sustained damage so minimal he said he's not going to worry about fixing it. The rest of his neighborhood, however, was hit hard, he said, and he spent a lot of the day helping his neighbors clear trees from the road. In a few days when cell phone service improves, Walton said he expects a lot of calls. "In the next 2 weeks, my phone will not stop ringing," he said. A lot of good trees. In the Oak Hill-Jackson neighborhood, James Doolin assessed damage to his sister's house, a home that was first owned by their mother in 1978. A few doors down is Doolin's house, where he has lived for 11 years. Doolin has lived in the Oak Hill-Jackson neighborhood for most of his life. He believes in the power of his community to work together to clean up wreckage after the storm, but there is a lot of work ahead, he said. His sister's house sustained several holes in the siding. Shingles are missing, and there is a hole in the garage roof. Quote, "We're losing a lot of good trees. They're what give a neighborhood character," Doolin said. Meeting neighbors. Lori Thomas, who lives near Cedar Rapids Kennedy High School, didn't observe a lot of structural damage to her house. But like most everywhere, the storm took down a lot of trees. After the storm cleared Monday and residents walked out to find many of the roads blocked by trees, Thomas said the neighbors assessed the damage and together used chainsaws to clear the streets. Quote, "I met neighbors I've never met before," Thomas said. "The pandemic got pushed to the side as we started cleaning up and helping each other out," end quote. Tree smashes teen's first car. The only thing 15-year-old Caden Tresnick could do as Monday's storm blew through was watch the huge oak tree in the front yard being ripped out of the ground and smashing onto the top of his first car, a Chevrolet Malibu parked in the drive. His mother, Abby Tresnick, was at Target, talking to Caden on the phone as the tree fell, also damaging the roof of the porch area and garage in the 100 block of 29th Avenue Southwest. Quote, "He was watching as it happened," Abby Tresnick said. The Tresnicks were cleaning up Tuesday with some help from family and friends, but the Malibu remained buried under the large oak. Only the back end of the car near the taillight could be seen. Around the corner in the 2900 block of Bowling Street Southwest, Andrea Meter and her family also had extensive storm damage, which knocked down a wooden fence surrounding her lot, ripped up trees, tore off gutters, and completely ripped up a shed, leaving only the mangled contents behind. Meter said she was driving home when the storm hit. Everyone went into the basement. Quote, "It was a surprise when we came out of the basement and saw this," Meter said. "A pine tree is down and probably 5 or 6 other trees. The crabapple tree on the corner is down. Shingles are off," end quote. Meter said her family has lived there since 2008 when they had to move because of the flood. Hero of the day. Linda Butler, a former pastor in Dysart, was scared Monday when the powerful winds ripped open her front door, letting in rainwater and then feeling the house in the 600 block of 5th Street Northwest move a little. But she said her neighbor had more damage as part of another building across the street behind a parking lot was taken apart by the wind and blown over into her and her neighbor's house. Butler's car, parked in front of the house, was bashed in by pieces of the other building. Quote, "The scariest thing was that a gas hose was pulled out over there at the neighbor's house, and it was lightning out, but another neighbor, Leo, came over with a wrench and shut it off. He was the real hero of the day." Long way for gas. Cars were lined up Tuesday along the main road in Quasqueton, a small Buchanan County town, waiting to get into K&S Quasquemart. Most of all of them had plates from Linn County. "Well," said store owner-manager Tammy Scotch, pausing when asked what her day had been like. Scotch literally was directing traffic, telling someone to pull ahead to one of her 3 gas pumps as the person ahead of them left. Quote, "It's been nonstop since last night," she said. "Even after we closed, they were still getting after the pumps," end quote. Without power, most gas stations were without the ability to pump gas. That sent tons of people, especially from northern Linn County, to this town along the Wapsipinicon River. Quote, "We don't have power," said Jeff Schemmick of Walker as he filled a half dozen containers with gas. Quote, "We had no damage, none. We have no damage whatsoever in Walker, but we still don't have power. This is nuts," end quote. In other front page news, John Stepp of the Gazette reports utilities warn of several days without power. Electric utilities in eastern Iowa are bracing for an extended outage as more than 100,000 residents in Linn and Johnson counties remain without power Tuesday. A derecho storm with winds estimated at 100 miles per hour tore through much of the Midwest and downed power lines and other critical energy infrastructure across the state. Quote, "The storm created damage beyond what we've seen before, and it could take several days before the majority of services are restored," said Terry Koba, Alliant Energy's president of the Iowa utility, in a statement. Quote, "For some customers, especially those living in more rural areas, it could be longer," end quote. As of Tuesday at 4 p.m., almost all of Alliant Energy's customers in Linn and Johnson counties still were without power. In Linn County, 94,788 of 97,603 customers were without power. 4,509 of 9,827 in Johnson County didn't have power. Mid-American Energy Company has 15,537 of its 47,836 Johnson County customers without power. Spokesman Jeff Greenwood said, quote, "It may be several days before power is fully restored in Iowa." Quote, "Dozens of crews," end quote, "are coming from other companies to help Mid-American restore power, starting with areas of so-called critical need." Almost two-thirds of Linn County Rural Electric Cooperative's customers in Linn and Johnson counties, 18,417 of 30,531, were also still without power. Spokeswoman Carrie Langridge said Linn County REC is telling customers to, quote, "plan for an extended outage," end quote. Electric utilities asked customers to stay away from downed power lines. Quote, "Even if you think it is a cable or a telephone line, it might be in contact with a power line," Greenwood said. Mediacom is working to restore internet service. Mediacom spokeswoman Phyllis Peters said Mediacom has about 224,000 customers without service in Iowa, excluding the Dubuque and Quad Cities areas. The company needs electric utilities like Alliant and MidAmerican to, quote, "take care of their business first," end quote, before Mediacom service can be restored. Quote, "This is a layered process," Peters said. "We can't skip a layer. There's no reason that anyone can think they can have internet if they don't have commercial power," end quote. Mediacom's fiber line connecting Cedar Rapids and Vinton is damaged, Peters said, and technicians couldn't repair it overnight because of Cedar Rapids curfew. Peters said most customers' internet service will resume once electricity comes back, though. Quote, "Most people will have their modems active when power is restored," Peters said. "They may need to reboot or recycle that modem, but none of that happens until Alliant and MidAmerican can get their work done," end quote. Mediacom identified 3 major cuts in its fiber network, Peters said. The cuts near Vinton, Cedar Rapids, and Iowa City mean some Mediacom customers still will not have internet after their electric power is restored. Quote, "We understand this is frustrating," Peters said. Peters said it requires, quote, "the rarest of rare," end quote, storms to cause three cuts of this size. The electric utilities get priority to make repairs before Mediacom's technicians can complete work on utility poles. Peters urged customers to use the Mediacom's mobile care app or online chat functions if they have mobile internet access. Quote, "We respectfully ask for patience while the restoration efforts proceed on all fronts," Peters said. "There is a high volume of calls coming into our call centers, causing longer than normal wait times," end quote. A spokeswoman from IMON Communications did not immediately comment on the impact of the storm on IMON services. The storm damage also limited Iowans' cell phone reception. Verizon is experiencing, quote, "some network disruption," end quote, in the Cedar Rapids area because of Monday's storm, spokesman David Weissman said. Quote, "Fiber cable cuts during the storm and by third parties during recovery efforts afterwards are the main cause of network disruptions like these," Weissman said in a statement. Quote, "While most of our sites have battery backup and generators, the eventual return of commercial power will also help alleviate capacity issues as more people will have access to home internet and rely less on their mobile devices for internet needs," end quote. A spokeswoman from U.S. Cellular was not immediately available to comment. Nuclear power plant shuts down, sees damage to cooling towers. NextEra Energy shut down Duane Arnold Energy Center in Palo as the nuclear facility lost power Monday, but spokesman Peter Robbins said the facility is, quote, "stable," end quote. The storm caused damage to the exterior of some buildings in the plant, including the cooling towers. Quote, "The cooling towers there, which is part of the power production process, which basically turns steam into water, were damaged pretty extensively," Robbins said. "It is the only nuclear power plant in Iowa and is scheduled to permanently shut down in October." Robbins said it's, quote, "too early to say," end quote, whether the damage will force Duane Arnold Energy Center to close early. Quote, "The top priority is obviously keeping the site stable and supporting our employees," Robbins said. Here are the latest updates on storm cleanup, power outages, and more in the Cedar Rapids and Iowa City areas for Wednesday, August 12th. Marion warns of fire risks after two house fires. The Marion Fire Department responded to two house fires last night. One was a 50% loss and the other a total loss. Both were caused by open flames being used as a light source during the power outage. The Marion Fire Department offers these important reminders. Do not have a burning flame within 3 feet of combustibles, any item that can burn. Make sure the candle or lamp is not on a plastic surface. Do not leave an open flame unattended. Make sure the flame is completely out before leaving the room and no longer producing smoke. If possible, use battery-powered or solar-powered lighting. If you have pets, please try to avoid using open flames. As storm cleanup continues, be sure to protect the area around fire hydrants and keep yard waste or debris away from the hydrants. 3 feet of clearance should be maintained on all sides. Some power restored in Northeast Cedar Rapids. Power has been restored to parts of Northeast Cedar Rapids, police said on social media early Wednesday. Quote, "Power has been restored, for now, to a section of Northeast Cedar Rapids to include the Lindale, Collins Aerospace, and Target Northeast area. Power has also been restored to a portion of downtown," the Cedar Rapids Police Department posted on Facebook. Utility crews are continuing to work to restore power in the city, though officials said Tuesday it could take several days. Cedar Rapids curfew in effect, transit suspended. A nightly curfew is in effect indefinitely from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. in Cedar Rapids as crews continue to work to restore power and clear debris. Transit service also has been suspended until further notice, according to the city. Hundreds treated at local hospitals. Unity Point Health St. Luke's Hospital's emergency department has treated over 200 patients since Monday's storm, a spokesperson told the Gazette late Tuesday. The department is seeing a steady number of patients, many with lacerations, injuries from falls, bumps on the head, and chest pain. Gage Miskimen of the Gazette reports shelters and charging stations in the works as Cedar Rapids and Marion as power outages continue. City, school, and county facilities in the Cedar Rapids metro area are dealing with damages from Monday's storm. The I'm on Ice Arena at 1100 Rockford Road Southwest was hit hard, said Cedar Rapids City Manager Jeff Pomerantz. He said a portion of the city's public works facility was damaged as well. Quote, the initial cleanup is going to take, I'm sure, months, but as far as damages to houses and public facilities and businesses, it's going to take even longer, he said. Both Cedar Rapids and Marion have citywide curfews in effect from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. In Marion, multiple city buildings were affected by the high winds. The Marion Public Library in Uptown Marion lost part of its roof and has some water damage, Marion City Manager Lon Plakhan said. Across the street, City Park looked like a jungle as many trees had been blown over or ripped from the ground. Plakhan said public service also lost part of its roof and the Marion Police Department saw some water get into the building. He said City Hall also had some water push in under the west doors, but seemed okay otherwise. Lynn Mar and Marion Independent High Schools both experienced some damage as well, with Lynn Mar seeing some roof damage, Plakhan said. Some of the letters spelling Marion on the front of the Marion High School building were knocked off in the storm. Across the county, there is still significant damage to traffic signals and signal poles in all cities. All intersections in Marion were operating as four-way stops. Lynn County Supervisor Ben Rogers said there is some damage to the Lynn County Access Center, which is scheduled to open in October, and damage to the Fillmore Building, which was in the process of getting its roof replaced. Rogers said Lynn County buildings currently are running off generation power. Shelters and charging stations. Shelters and charging stations are in the works in Lynn County for those displaced or left without power, said Steve Okonek, coordinator for the Lynn County Emergency Management Agency. Marion announced in a news release a temporary shelter has been set up by the American Red Cross in the Thomas Park Safe Room. Marion residents in need of a place to stay were advised to visit with the Red Cross in person at Thomas Park. In addition, power strips are available outside the Marion Police Department for anyone needing to charge phones or other devices. Erin Jordan of the Gazette reports many CR groceries open. You've heard of stress eating, right? Power outages that kept many Cedar Rapids grocery stores closed Tuesday made it really hard to binge unless your freezer was full of ice cream starting to liquefy. Lynn County, Fairway, and Aldi stores were closed Tuesday because of power outages caused by Monday's storm, spokespeople confirmed. Many Corridor Hy-Vee stores, as well as Johnson County, Fairways, and Aldi's were open, although most were operating with generators and had to dispose of refrigerated items they could not fit on cold storage trucks. Quote, there are people getting through, but they can't get milk or meat or anything like that, said Tony Morrow, director of the Hy-Vee store on First Avenue in Iowa City, which was selling only non-perishables. But, quote, as many people are out of power, they aren't going to stock up on groceries, end quote. Some people who have been ordering groceries online because of COVID-19 were thwarted by the power outages. Instacart, a California company that processes Aldi's online orders, allowed orders Monday evening, but the Iowa City Aldi wasn't prepared to fulfill orders Tuesday, and the store was closed much of the day. Aldi encouraged customers in this situation to go to shop.aldi.us/help and chat online with an Instacart representative. Gazette readers reported the Wilson Avenue Hy-Vee was grilling up hot dogs before the meat could spoil, and cash registers were accepting credit and cash only. The come-and-go on 2nd Street in Coralville could take only cash, but that didn't keep cars from lining up at the gas pumps. Ice was sold out at many convenience stores. Many eastern Iowans without electricity were seeking fast food and maybe comfort Tuesday. The drive-through line at the McDonald's on Mormon Trek Boulevard in Iowa City was 20 cars deep at 11:15 a.m. Employees had locked the doors and weren't answering the phone, apparently focusing on filling drive-through orders for hot fries and burgers. Hardee's in Coralville lost its sign to high winds Monday, but was still serving customers Tuesday afternoon. Let's turn now to today's Insight page in the Gazette. The Gazette's editorial today is titled, Nature's Latest Test. We've felt this awful sinking feeling in the pit of our stomachs before when the power of nature turns the world as we know it upside down. It came again Monday afternoon as a violent derecho swept across the eastern half of Iowa and on into Illinois, spawning winds in excess of 100 miles per hour. In its wake, we emerged from shelter to find our neighborhoods transformed. Trees twisted and broken, roofs cleared of shingles, siding ripped from walls, structures badly damaged, and debris everywhere. hundreds of thousands of people were left without power. Few of us, even as severe weather hardened Iowans, had ever seen a storm so ferocious. An, quote, inland hurricane, end quote, seemed like an accurate description. Its duration and power were astounding. But in those stunned moments after the storm, another feeling emerged even before the winds died down and the rain stopped. Okay, who needs help? Neighbors checked on neighbors. It wasn't long before people were pitching in to clear tree damage blocking streets. Some were helping neighbors cover damaged roofs with tarps. Generators were offered to people struggling with powerless sump pumps. Do you need tools? Do you need ice? What can we do? We've felt this gut punch before, of course, after the flood of 2008 and 2016, and after storms in between. The first impulse always is to help. People rushing to fill sandbags then. People rushing to see what they can do to lessen the blow now. Now comes a long, frustrating wait. It could take days to restore power to the metro area, which means the cascading problems associated with no electricity will continue. Necessities will be in short supply. It's going to be a difficult time, so we need that helpful impulse to continue. We'll need people coming together and plenty of patience. We're still in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic. What's next, 2020? Understandably, the storm is now the problem in front of us, but we can't abandon virus precautions, wearing masks, and social distancing. The virus remains a threat, but we'll get through this. We live in strong communities that have been tested before. We've learned from those experiences. Worlds turned upside down can recover. The derecho of 2020 will be added to a lengthening list of painful tests we have passed. In the meantime, stay safe. And that's today's Gazette editorial. Liz Lentz's column in today's Gazette is titled, This is the Summer of the Never-Ending Scream. I am sitting in a hotel with two children and a dog. We've been driven from our home in Cedar Rapids because of the apocalyptic storm that blew through Iowa on Monday, left us with part of a tree on our house, parts of the fence destroyed, power lines in the backyard, and power and internet out for days. As a single mom with two small kids and pets and a job to do, and my book comes out this week, I didn't know what else to do. Driving through Cedar Rapids on our way out of town, we saw a billboard bent in half, buildings collapsed, trees uprooted, homes destroyed. I reminded the kids that we are okay, how lucky we are to have gas in the car and options, reminding them of all the neighbors who just hours before were in the street with chainsaws, clearing the roads of fallen trees, drinking beer and laughing, because that's what we do instead of crying. After my 9-year-old daughter and I cleared the driveway with some help from neighbors and surveyed the damage, we came back inside our house. She handed me a pillow. Quote, if you need to scream, scream into this, she said. We laughed, because again, the only other option was the scream. The summer of 2020 has been the summer of the primal and never-ending scream. In April, early on in the lockdown, author Meg Ellison tweeted that her neighbor had come outside and screamed a swear word so loud it startled the birds. The tweet went viral, with many people declaring they felt the same way. Protesters have taken to the street to scream about racial injustice in this country. Others have been robbed of their ability to scream by a novel respiratory virus that has run nearly unchecked in our state. In July, when a Japanese amusement park reopened, it encouraged visitors to, quote, scream inside your heart, end quote, instead of out loud, to prevent the spread of COVID-19. The request became an internet meme, with people declaring that to, quote, scream inside your heart, end quote, is an eternal 2020 mood. Everything that has gone wrong has gone wrong. And if something hasn't gone wrong, then just wait for it. Our country's mishandling of a global pandemic has killed over 150,000 people. Our president has been lying to us. So has our governor. The wide-ranging economic effects still have yet to be seen. Meanwhile, our elected officials are fighting over giving unemployed Americans enhanced unemployment as if anyone besides Amazon is profiting off this mess. In Iowa, as the virus surges, the governor is forcing schools to return to in-person teaching. Teachers are concerned. Parents are concerned. There is no mask mandate, no widespread effective testing, and still, it's back to school. Now, a natural disaster, whose devastation is still being understood, will be compounded by the effects of the virus, each making the other worse. So many are homeless, so many without power and employment, and the worst could still be to come. So many of us haven't survived this summer of terror. Over 900 in Iowa haven't. And as we clean and muddle forward, laughing and crying, please never stop screaming that it didn't have to be this way. Again, that was Liz Lentz's column in today's Gazette. Today's letter to the editor is written by Therese Grant, president, LWVIA, of Grinnell. Her letter is titled, Restoration of Voting Rights, a Welcome Development. Governor Kim Reynolds did a good thing last week. Restoring voting eligibility to people who have been convicted of a felony was overdue. Governor Reynolds greatly prefers a constitutional amendment to make her executive order a permanent change, and we agree with her. The amendment's path through the Iowa Senate proved to be impassable, so the interim action of an executive order became the only option. For years, the League of Women Voters has worked for a reform of Iowa's criminal justice system. Thousands of letters, emails, phone calls, personal visits, and group presentations have been made to help legislators know just what is at stake and what benefits can come to our state and our citizens with just reform. 100 years ago, after a 72-year struggle, suffrage was gained for women in this country. That movement, 100 years ago, spawned the League of Women Voters. Today, the League continues the work of building a strong democracy and empowering voters. The governor's action, supported by the actions of so many engaged citizens within and beyond the League, is an important step in that process. Signed, Therese Grant, President, LVWIA, of Grinnell. Zach Kucharski, executive editor of the Gazette, writes, Test Iowa worked for me. This past week, I had my first COVID-19 test and my first experience as a patient of the Test Iowa program. I was pleasantly surprised. I wanted to share a bit about that experience as we've been spent a significant amount of time in the Gazette covering the testing program's setup, implementation, and validation of testing. I also received some heated feedback after the editorial board, of which I'm part, called the Test Iowa program a failure. Not surprisingly, the editorial didn't go unnoticed by the governor's staff. Much of our editorial opinion at the time had to do with the administrative side of the test. My concerns about administrative details remain. But I feel it would be unfair if I didn't share that the testing experience exceeded my expectations as a patient. I appreciated having Test Iowa as a testing option and would urge anyone needing a test to consider it. Quick details about my case. I showed no symptoms but had indirect contact with someone about 12 days earlier who had since tested positive for COVID-19. I felt fine, but as a dad and a manager who has spent months using masks, social distancing, limiting contact, and reading media stories from around the world, I still needed a definitive answer. Test Iowa worked well for me. I opted to use it to understand the system and because I didn't have an urgent medical need. I was able to make an appointment online on my first attempt Friday night. An email gave me clear directions about what I needed to do. The Cedar Rapids Test Iowa site was full, and while I wasn't thrilled about driving to Waterloo, finding the test site there was easy. The staffers were fantastic and skilled at what they were doing. The person administering the test helped put me at ease about how the swab would fit and skillfully administered the test. I was on my way within 2 minutes. I had my test results within 24 hours, significantly faster than the 2 to 3 days I had been promised. The results were easy to understand, and the process for logging in to get them was quick. I'd be remiss if I didn't first say thank you to the many people who have worked tirelessly to start the Test Iowa program in extremely difficult circumstances, and to those who staff the test sites and process the results. The system worked well. Still, areas of the program should be refined. While I was able to make an appointment using the online tool, I had to pick the Waterloo site. I wasn't able to see the next available appointment in Cedar Rapids. Driving 50 miles is a barrier for many Iowans, and not being able to know the next available appointment is just frustrating. The other thing that surprised me was how empty the Waterloo test site was. I was able to drive in immediately, and only one other car was there. I received a similar report from those undergoing testing in Cedar Rapids at about the same time. It's unclear to me why more appointments can't be made in a specified time period. And it's something we'll look into further. Crafting editorials is a difficult exercise, but my Test Iowa patient experience now becomes part of the collective knowledge that helps shape opinions going forward. The new information provides us opportunities to refine and revisit our previous positions. It's a responsibility that our editorial board doesn't take lightly. Again, this guest column was written by Zach Kucharski, executive editor of the Gazette. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, August 12, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Decora Ardith Triska, aged 88, died Sunday, August 9. Arrangements by Schluter Bailick Funeral Home in Decora. Independence Anne Marie Stainbrook, aged 73, died Sunday, August 9. Arrangements by Rife Family Center in Independence. Marion James L. Tucker, aged 91, died Sunday, August 9. Arrangements by Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion. McGregor Mark Allen Laufer, aged 69, died Sunday, August 9. Arrangements by Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in McGregor. Also in McGregor, Sandra Pauline Schlitter, aged 71, died Saturday, March 14. Arrangements by Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Monona. Walk-on. Margene F. Fahey, aged 77, died Sunday, August 9. Arrangements by Martin Grau Funeral Home in Waukon. Lucille Lorraine McAndrew, age 95, of Bernard, Iowa, passed away on August 9th at home, surrounded by her family. Private family mass of Christian burial will be at Holy Family New Melloray Catholic Church, with the Reverend Rodney Allers officiating. No public visitation will be held. A live stream of the funeral mass will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, August 13th, on the Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory's Facebook page. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Online condolences may be left at www.leonardfuneralhome.com. Lucille Herrig was born at home in Lamont, Iowa, on December 21, 1924, to John and Mary Thielen Herrig. She attended school through 12th grade at Holy Rosary School in Lamont. Lucille was united in marriage to Robert J. McAndrew on September 29, 1948. She and Bob farmed in the Bernard area for many years. Bob preceded her in death on April 24, 1999. Lucille was a devout Catholic and a member of Holy Family Church. She lived her faith every day. Lucille was a wonderful mother to her 10 grandchildren and a loving grandmother to her 29 grandchildren, 37 great-grandchildren, and one due in February 21, and two great-great-grandchildren. She set an enduring example for her family on how to live life with integrity, compassion, grace, and humor. After raising her children, Lucille worked as a cook at Heritage Manor for 28 years, retiring at 80 years of age. She truly enjoyed her work and her co-workers. She never felt as if her job was work. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be given to the Bernard Fire Department or a charity of your choice. Edith Allaire Miller, aged 95, of Coralville, passed away on August 10th at Windmill Manor. Allaire was born on February 5, 1925, in Ashland, Wisconsin, to Willard and Edna Pratt Miller. She graduated from Iowa City High in 1943. She attended the University of Iowa School of Nursing, becoming an X-ray technician. Allaire participated in the World War II Cadet Nursing Corps and was a lifetime member of Beta Sigma Phi. She is survived by one brother, Harvey Miller of Iowa City, and several nieces and nephews. No public services are planned. To share a thought, memory, or condolence with her family, please visit the funeral home website at www.gayandchia.com. Wayne D. Brandt, age 56, of Marion, passed away unexpectedly on Saturday, May 16, at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids. A visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. on Saturday, August 15, at Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids. A celebration of life will follow at 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Amy A. Burns, aged 68, of Cedar Rapids, passed away Friday, August 7th, at home under hospice care. She was a member of All Saints Church and attended services of Stonebridge and Antioch churches as well. Amy loved doing crafts, decorating, shopping, and trips home to visit her family in Louisville, Kentucky. Amy was a caring, loving wife and mother who spent a significant part of her life helping others. She was recently employed as a caseworker for Linn County Mental Health. No services will be held. Online condolences may be directed to the family at www.iowacremation.com. Robert J. Melliker, aged 88, formerly of the Hills area, died Saturday, August 8th at Parkview Manor Care Center in Wellman. Graveside services will be held at 2 p.m. Sunday, August 16th at St. Stanislaus Cemetery near Hills, where military honors will be rendered. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made in his memory to St. Joseph Catholic Church of Hills, Hospice Compasses, or the Honor Flight Program. For a complete obituary or to share a thought, memory, or condolence with Robert's family, please visit the funeral home website at www.gayandchia.com. Dean Lipkamon, aged 85, of Solon, passed away Thursday, August 6th at Solon Care Center. Graveside services will be at 3 p.m. Saturday, August 15th at Oakland Cemetery in Solon. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at Gay and Chia Funeral and Cremation Service in Iowa City. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Boy Scout Troop 120 of Solon. To share a thought, memory, or condolence, please visit the funeral home website at www.gayandchia.com. Mr. Lipkamon was born June 22, 1935, in New Salem, Illinois. He married Evelyn Rahans on August 24, 1957, in Solon. He was employed by Wilson & Company, then Farmstead Foods, in Cedar Rapids for 35 years, retiring in 1990. He had served as Scoutmaster of Boy Scout Troop 120 for 5 years in the 1970s. He was a member of St. Mary's Catholic Church. James F. Weingarten, age 93, of North Liberty and formerly of Cedar Falls, died Sunday, August 9th, at his home. He was born February 8, 1927, in Iowa County, the son of Philip and Helen Warner Weingarten. He married L. Jeanette Woodcock on August 22, 1948, in Tripola. He attended Deep River School, Central College, and Iowa State Teachers College, where he earned a BA in Industrial Arts and an MA in Education Administration. He served in the U.S. Army during World War II and was employed as an educator and administrator with Waterloo Community Schools for 43 years, retiring in 1993. He was a member of United Church of Christ in Cedar Falls for 56 years, and presently First Presbyterian Church of Iowa City. He was a 50-year member of both American Legion Post 237 and Black Hawk Masonic Lodge 65. He was past commander of American Legion Post 237. Private graveside services will take place at Fairview Cemetery in Cedar Falls, with military honors conducted by Cedar Falls AMVETS Post 49 Honor Guard. Richardson Funeral Service is assisting the family. Condolences may be left at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. Pauline E. Trout, aged 103, died Tuesday, August 11th at the Crestview Care Center in West Branch. Services are pending for later this month to be announced through Gay and Chia Funeral and Cremation Service. Betsy A. Shear, aged 61, of Independence, passed away on July 29th at her home in rural Independence. Betsy was born on December 7, 1958, in Cresco, the daughter of Stanley and Dolores Qualley Fretheim. She attended the Ridgeway, Iowa schools and Cresco High School. She went on to receive her Bachelor of Nursing at Calmer College in Calmer. On August 23, 1986, she married Terry G. Shear in Ridgeway, and they made their home in rural Independence. She worked as a registered nurse at the Mental Health Institute in Independence until her retirement in 2015. She enjoyed spending time with her family, especially her grandchildren. Many memories were made fishing, camping, and attending many classic rock concerts with her family and friends. A memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. on Saturday, August 15th at the Rife Family Center Funeral Home and Crematory in Independence. To leave an online condolence, please go to www.rifefamilycenter.com. Earl William Merritt. Services for Earl William Merritt of Marion that were scheduled for Tuesday and Wednesday have been postponed due to the effects of Monday's storm. Services will be rescheduled and further information will be published in the Gazette and updated on the Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service website. Glory Lynn Livingston of Ottawa, Kansas, peacefully passed away at her home with family and friends by her side on August 8th. Glory was 70 years old. Visitation will be held Thursday, August 13th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Bruce Funeral Home in Gardner, Kansas. Graveside service will be Friday, August 14th at 10 a.m. at Wellsville Cemetery in Wellsville, Kansas. Glory was born June 1, 1950 in Sioux City, Iowa, to Lawrence and Gloria Waltermeyer Sather. Glory and her family relocated to Cedar Rapids in 1957, where she attended school and graduated from John F. Kennedy High School in 1968. Glory and David met as members of Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Cedar Rapids. They were married December 5, 1970 in Cedar Rapids and shared 40 years of marriage together. Full details and condolences may be left at www.brucefuneralhome.com. Alberta M. Cluse, aged 88, of Iowa City, died Thursday, August 6th at Mercy Hospital in Iowa City. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, August 14th at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Hills, followed with burial at St. Stanislaus Cemetery near Hills. There will be a time of visitation for family and friends from 9 a.m. until services at the church on Friday. In lieu of flowers, a memorial fund has been established in Alberta's memory. To share a thought, memory, or condolence, please visit the funeral home website at www.gayandchia.com. Ted A. Chambers, aged 84, a longtime area educator and coach in the Iowa City area, died Monday, August 10th. Graveside services will be held at 4 p.m. Sunday, August 16th at Memory Garden Cemetery. Visitation will be from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday at Gay and Chia Funeral and Cremation Service. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made in his memory to Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in North Liberty. For a complete obituary or to share a thought, memory, or condolence with Ted's family, please visit the funeral home website at www.gayandchia.com. Susan Joanne Hazlett, aged 78, of Ainsworth, died peacefully on Sunday, August 9th at Halcyon House in Washington. Celebration of life services will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, August 15th at the Jones and Eden Funeral Home in Washington. The family will receive friends from noon until 2 p.m. on Saturday. Interment will be held at Oregon Township Cemetery in Ainsworth. Online, a general memorial has been established. Online condolences may be sent for Susan's family through the web at www.jonesfh.com. And that concludes the obituaries in today's Cedar Rapids Gazette. On the front page of the sports section of today's Gazette, J.R. Ogden reports, canceled. Big Ten says there is, quote, too much uncertainty, end quote, for any fall sports. Disappointing. That was the word Iowa football coach Kirk Ferentz used most Tuesday afternoon during a Zoom conference after the Big Ten conference announced the postponement of the 2020 football season and all 2021 fall sports because of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Quote, it's disappointing, but it's reality, he said. We'll get our feet on the ground and we'll deal with it, end quote. The Big Ten noticed in its release the decision was based on, quote, multiple factors, end quote. Quote, the mental and physical health and welfare of our student athletes has been at the center of every decision we have made regarding the ability to proceed forward, Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren said in the release. Quote, as time progressed and after hours of discussion with our Big Ten Task Force for Emerging Infectious Diseases, and the Big Ten Sports Medicine Committee, it became abundantly clear that there was too much uncertainty regarding potential medical risks to allow our student athletes to compete this fall. Quote, we know how significant the student athlete experience can be in shaping the future of the talented young women and men who compete in the Big Ten Conference. Although that knowledge made this a painstaking decision, it did not make it difficult. While I know our decision today will be disappointing in many ways for our thousands of student athletes and their families, I am heartened and inspired by their resilience, their insightful and discerning thoughts, and their participation through our conversations to this point. Everyone associated with the Big Ten Conference and its member institutions is committed to getting everyone back to competition as soon as it is safe to do so. End quote. That was a tough message for Ferentz to deliver to his players, who were, quote, emotional about the decision. Quote, football is a big part of our lives, he said. It doesn't mean more to anybody than the players, but it's not life or death either, end quote. Ferentz praised his players, calling them, quote, unflappable, end quote, and said they and coaches were working hard to play football this fall. That's why it was so disappointing. Quote, the majority of our guys wanted to play, Ferentz said, noting, quote, two or three were thinking about sitting out the season. Quote, they wanted to play this fall. They've been here day in and day out working, end quote. Other fall sports affected by this decision are volleyball, men's and women's cross country, field hockey, and women's soccer. Men's soccer is also off, but Iowa doesn't offer that sport. The Big Ten said it is evaluating, quote, a number of options, end quote, for its fall sports, including possibly playing games in the spring. Quote, decisions regarding winter and spring sports will also continue to be evaluated, the release noted. Ferentz wasn't ready to talk about spring football yet. Quote, we have a lot of time to recalibrate, he said. But if football is played in the spring, he said the Hawkeyes will be ready. Quote, I think we can do anything we want if we do it intelligently, he said. We have to look at it as spring and fall combined, end quote. The Pac-12 also announced it is taking the fall off Tuesday, joining the Mid-American Conference, which was the first FBS league to postpone its football season Saturday. The Mountain West Conference followed Monday. The Big 12 met Tuesday night to decide its fate and is planning on a fall schedule. The ACC and the SEC, the other two Power 5 conferences, have not announced any changes to their fall plans. Not everyone in the Big 10 was thrilled with the decision. Nebraska issued a joint statement from its chancellor, system president, athletics director Bill Moose, and football coach Scott Frost. Quote, we are very disappointed in the decision by the Big Ten Conference to postpone the fall football season, as we have been and continue to be ready to play. We continue to strongly believe the absolute safest place for our student athletes is within the rigorous safety protocols, testing procedures, and the structure and support provided by Husker Athletics. We hope it may be possible for our student athletes to have the opportunity to compete, end quote. A day earlier, Frost said, quote, our university is committed to playing no matter what, no matter what that looks like and how that looks. We want to play no matter who it is or where it is, end quote. Ferentz said, quote, it's easy to say things, but the conference made a decision and we're going to abide by that, end quote. The decision is going to have a huge financial impact on all college athletics. The broadcast rights for football generate millions of dollars for many conferences and schools. The Washington Post reported Wisconsin expected to lose $100 million. Quote, we'll all get through this, Ferentz said. I promise you that. College sports will come back. They may look different, but at some point we'll be up and running again, end quote. In auto racing news, Justin Webster of the Gazette reports, Hawkeye Downs cancels next 2 weeks of races due to storm damage. With two Fridays remaining before the weekly racing points championships were scheduled to be awarded at Hawkeye Downs on August 21st, the tracks board has decided to pause before making any final decisions on the conclusion of the 2020 season. Quote, we have a lot of damage to several of the buildings and the tracks lighting as well, said Caleb Sluha, media manager for Hawkeye Downs. Quote, without safe grandstands, concessions, or bathrooms, we won't be able to race, end quote. The two events missed will include Wall of Fame inductions planned for this Friday night and the Big 8 Traveling Late Model Series that would have joined the regular classes championship features for the final night of the season. Other events scheduled for the space included the Crown Rally Tour this Saturday at 10 a.m., a drive-in at the track showing of Toy Story 4 later in the evening, and the SPI Outlaws on August 20th. Quote, it's going to come down to if we get electricity and wind, Sluha said. The next step after that is cleanup, end quote. Luckily, most of the damage was sustained by the older buildings and not the recent renovations or sound system, according to Sluha. Quote, if we can't resume the season, we will just continue to rebuild bigger and better for next season, end quote. Returning to the news with an agriculture focus, Michaela Ram reports, Iowa storm devastates farms as nearly half of state's row crop acres are damaged. Throughout eastern Iowa, the full extent of the damage caused by this week's storm still remained largely unknown by Tuesday afternoon, but it's clear farmers will bear a devastating blow. Crops were flattened in their fields, buildings were torn apart, and grain bins collapsed in the 100-mile-per-hour winds. Quote, "This will ruin us," said Keystone resident Daryl Sind as he studied the town's collapsed grain bins, which are owned by ADM. Dustin Kessner, owner and operator of an agricultural retail business called Kessner Seed, expects to see his business stall in the coming months. However, he said he's more concerned at this point about his farm in Benton County. The farm, which has belonged to the family for about 160 years, saw extensive damage, including a destroyed shed and a missing roof from the back of the family home. Much of his field crops were damaged in the wind, and as a result, harvest will be a tedious and time-consuming process come fall. Likely, his whole crop will be a loss, he said. Quote, "This is a catastrophic scenario," said Kessner, aged 41, who rode out the storm on Monday in his pickup truck. Quote, "In the past, you typically see farmers helping farmers. You can't this time because everyone was hit," he said. Iowa farmers sustained, quote, "significant, severe," end quote, damage to crops, storage facilities, and other structures, but Iowa Agriculture Secretary Mike Naig said it will take some time to get a clear view of the financial, crop yield, and production losses. State climatologist Justin Gleason said the middle third of Iowa took the brunt of, quote, "extremely violent," end quote, straight-line winds and driving rain, including areas Naig indicated until Monday were looking at being very good, quote, "potentially historic crops," end quote. Quote, "It's incredibly devastating to see what's happening to crops and structures all across the storm path," he said. Now the Ag Secretary said it will depend if corn stalks, quote, "laid down," end quote, by the hurricane-like winds will bounce back in the maturing weeks leading up to harvest or be lost along with, quote, "tens of millions," end quote, of bushes of stored grain that were damaged or destroyed by the fast-moving storm. Naig said the financial cost should be evident in the next week or so. Iowa has about 30 million acres of agricultural land, up to 24 million of that dedicated to row crop production, Naig said. About 10 million of that was negatively impacted by the storm. Quote, "This is a very emotional situation for a lot of Iowa farmers," said Naig, in promoting the 800-447-1985 Iowa Concern hotline for any rural Iowans struggling to deal with losses, repairs, cleanup chores, and financial disruptions. Quote, "That stress is real," end quote. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, August 12, 2020. I'm your reader, Paula Carezzi. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. Shortly after modern humans arrived in Europe, the Neanderthals disappeared, and scientists think we had something to do with it. Neanderthals, or their direct ancestors, migrated out of Africa and into the Middle East and Europe around 250,000 years ago. Soon, they were well adapted to the environment. Large eyes helped them see in the longer nights and darker winters. Stout bodies helped them retain heat and handle large prey, and provided space for the large liver and kidneys needed for a diet heavy in protein. Their brains were as big as ours, but spent processing power on their greater visual and motor abilities. This may not have allowed them to develop higher communication or conceptual thinking to match ours, which may have been their downfall. Modern humans arrived on the scene 45,000 years ago, less physically adapted, but more mentally adaptable. We had cooperative hunting methods superior to the Neanderthals, allowing us to outcompete them for food, and perhaps reducing the large herbivore populations that they depended on. We also had superior tools and weapons. When there were conflicts between the groups, as there have been among tribes throughout history, our superior technology probably allowed us to prevail. But we weren't only fighting. There must have been considerable interbreeding, since we can find 1-3% of the Neanderthal genome in modern man. Which means the Neanderthals never completely disappeared. A little bit of them is alive in us today. I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.